What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas, and I'm so glad you're tuning in today. In our last episode, we talked about navigating the unexpected challenges and diagnoses that many parents face. I sat down with Dr. Kelly Fraden, who's a pediatrician, and we explored the experience of getting an unexpected diagnosis or navigating an unexpected challenge as a parent, and also how to get support, the emotions that can come up. And in today's episode, I invited Amanda Berg onto the podcast. Amanda is a mom to a type 1 diabetic toddler and a former NICU nurse. Her toddler was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 26 months old when their second baby was only 4 months old. So, yeah, an unexpected challenge. In this raw and vulnerable conversation, Amanda gets real about the challenges and the trauma associated with diagnosis, hospitalization, and then pain of the disease management. There are so many reasons that you might be tuning in to today's episode specifically based on your particular situation. And whatever the reason is, I'm so glad you're here. And I believe that you're going to leave this episode feeling a lot less alone and with hope and resources and next steps to take to get support for yourself. Okay, before we dive in, I did want to share with all of you that if you are based in California and you have been looking for support through therapy, my group practice is currently accepting new clients. You can check out the link in the show notes to learn more about our group practice of therapists who specialize in supporting parents. If you're not based in California, I never want to leave you out. There's a link in the show notes just for you. It'll take you to a blog post that I wrote up for you on the steps that you can take to find a good fit therapist that maybe takes a similar approach as I do in your area. All right, I'm so glad you're tuning in today. Let's get to the conversation. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for coming on today and for all your flexibility. We previously had this recording scheduled, and our family dog passed away that day, and you were just so compassionate, empathic, and flexible, and understanding, all the things. And I just really appreciate that, and so thrilled to finally get a chance to sit down with you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. And of course, I would not put up a fight or throw a fit. Your poor family dog. Like, I'm so sorry that that happened to you.
And as you and I were chatting before we started recording, there was a lot of grief, and I took that day and the day after off. And there was a lot of peace, right? Like, it's pretty wild how grief and peace, and even grief and joy, can dance together. There was a lot of that in the lead up, and then the day, and then following his passing. Just, it was time, and there was just like so much time spent in like memory and like just reclaiming the relationship with him before he left us, because things were really hard at the end, taking care of his senior dog.
Oof. Yes, I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah, the grief and joy dancing together is that hits home for me for sure.
Well, I have a feeling we might be touching on more of that as we dive into our conversation today. And before we totally dive in, I would love to get a chance to introduce you to the listener. And so, Amanda, maybe you could share a little bit about yourself, what lights you up, and what you're passionate about bringing us to this conversation.
Sure. Okay, so yes, I am Amanda, and I am a mom to two toddlers, an almost two-year-old and an almost four-year-old. I am a former NICU nurse, so I had a lot of passion in my, early days of my career taking care of tiny sick babies. And then after I had my second baby, just 4 months postpartum, our two-year-old was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and she came very close to losing her life, and my passion completely shifted to obviously being a mother, but being a caretaker of my daughter who now has this chronic illness. And so I left my job as a NICU nurse and, focused on raising these two girls. And slowly but surely, I dove into the online type 1 diabetes community. And one thing led to another, and I'm at this point where I'm incredibly passionate about spreading awareness and providing just a source of comfort, I suppose, to other parents who are going through what I went through, because it was a pretty terrible experience, to be frank.
Yeah, and one thing that I'm really I feel really grateful to you for is just in our prior conversations leading up to this recording, you've obviously done a lot of work to be able to speak to these experiences, not just because you're in the messy middle. I mean, sure, it's always messy middle, but like you've gotten support in a space where now you can offer support and speak to these things in a way where others can hear it, take it in, feel less alone. And so I would actually love to give you an opportunity to share with the listener what all this looked like in the really messy moments of it all, right?
Yeah.
The impact it had on your mental health, the trauma connected to this whole experience.
Sure. It's quite a long story. So I am going to provide just a little bit of background to, explain why I got to the point that I did, which you know, ended up being a full-on panic attack while driving my children on the freeway. And that is when I was forced to seek mental help.
Yeah.
So before all of this happened with the diabetes diagnosis, my husband and I, we've been together since high school. We have a very strong relationship, and that is a consistent, that's a solid, but we have been dealt our fair share of challenges. And I guess I'll start mainly with, we got pregnant in 2018 for the first time unexpectedly, but it was more than welcome. And we lost that baby. And then it, you know, made us realize we are ready. We want to start our family. And so we tried again. Yeah. We got pregnant again, and that was amazing, but we lost that baby too. And I had to have like a DNC for that pregnancy loss. So there was just extra trauma.
Yeah,
related to that aspect of it. And then we got pregnant with our oldest. Her name is Hattie. And that was, you know, just scary. I, at that point, hadn't had a healthy pregnancy yet. And we weren't sure. So a lot of anxiety surrounding that pregnancy. And halfway through, we found out she actually had a heart condition that we caught within a week of it becoming fatal.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. Yeah. Then the pregnancy obviously became high risk. I had to be hospitalized, lots of medications, constantly seeing high risk doctors. And then she was born a month early, and she was actually in the same NICU that I worked in.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So it was a lot. Yeah. That was just a lot happening in a year and a half for us.
It was a lot.
And then, you know, like, I had pretty severe postpartum anxiety with her, considering everything. And once I finally felt like I was catching my breath, COVID hit.
Oh my gosh. I mean, any, really, Amanda, any one of these things, right, are, we all can experience loss and medical situations in different ways, right? But I just want to name that, like, any one of these things would have been a huge stressor, traumatizing potentially, right? And a risk factor for, experiencing anxiety or trauma, PTSD, depression.
Yes.
And then COVID hits. And I know from what you've shared with me, the pile up of stressors didn't stop there.
No, the pileup did not stop there. The next thing that happened was we got pregnant with our second unexpectedly. And, you know, we are very grateful. I do want to put out there that we are fertile, you know, like, I don't want to, I don't want anyone to take away like, oh, just be grateful that you can get pregnant. We are very grateful that we can get pregnant, but in the same breath, we weren't prepared because our first was 14 months when we got pregnant with our second. And I really struggled with that pregnancy because it also happened. It coincided with the death of my mother-in-law. It was a challenging pregnancy. Looking back, I definitely had some perinatal depression that was undiagnosed and that I wasn't acknowledging.
Yeah.
And then we had our second baby, and it was a healing birth, but because she was, had no health issues and everything went according to plan, but I was so disconnected from her. And so then I, again, looking back, realized I was battling some pretty severe postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And then right when I kind of felt like my head was coming above water is when my two-year-old's diabetes diagnosis happened. We can get into the nitty-gritty of that story if you want, because that...
I think it would be helpful to kind of for the listener to kind of hear your experience and how, like, symptoms and how you came to the diagnosis, right? Like, things to look for and what the process was of getting the diagnosis and getting the support. But I do just want to check in on you first. Like, even just right here, right now, Amanda, as we're talking and you're sharing all of these experiences, like as a narrative, right? Like, mm-hmm. what I mean by narrative is you've gone through the experiences. I know that you've gotten support. And so now you're kind of speaking about it. Like, here's a story of this season of my life. And I guess I would love to hear a little bit about what it's like for you right now, as you're kind of going back and sharing this narrative publicly, right? And what steps did you take to get you to a place where you can speak about it in the way that you are now from a scar, right? Like, mm-hmm. these experiences, these traumas, they leave pieces, they leave things within us, right? It impacts us deeply. But to be able to share it in the way that you are now. Hey there, a quick word on our sponsor for today's podcast, Cozy Earth. If you are a regular listener, you have heard me talk about Cozy Earth before. I am a huge fan of Cozy Earth and their loungewear, and I recently put in a new order. I never really wear like traditional pajamas to bed, like something that was meant to be a pajama set. I'm usually just wearing like a t-shirt, an old shirt, or some sweatpants that I was wearing that afternoon, evening, and then I just wear that to bed. I get up in the morning, I'm still wearing that. And I wanted to have some better nighttime rituals, and that included taking a step to actually buy pajamas. I put in a new order on Cozy Earth, and I ordered their bamboo pajama short and the pants in stretch knit, along with the bamboo pajama top in blush. And I love it. I look forward to my nighttime routine, getting out of my daytime clothes and evening clothes, and actually putting on these pajamas. I think I might be sleeping even better with my new ritual. If you are interested in getting a pair of pajamas for yourself too, or for someone you love, check out CozyEarth.com. I have a code for you. As a Holding Space listener, you can use the code DrCassidy35 for 35% off your order. Go check out the link in the show notes for CozyEarth.com and check out their loungewear and the pajama set in bamboo. I love it. What is it like to share it now, and what helped you get to this now place of being able to share this narrative?
Yeah. Sharing it now is very healing. Kind of depends on the day, honestly. Sometimes it's like very sleep dependent, or even where I'm at in my cycle dependent, you know.
Totally.
I am emotional talking about it, but obviously I'm not sobbing and hysterical crying on the ground, which, trust me, I went through that phase too.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like when you talk about it, it isn't triggering in the way in which you feel like you're re-experiencing it. And like, would you say that's the case?
That is definitely the case. Yeah. I can put myself back there, but I've been able to compartmentalize where I know that chapter is closed and done, mm-hmm. and where we're at currently is healthy, happy, and thriving. And I put in so much effort, work, you know, lots of hours, lots of talking to a lot of people to get to this point.
Yeah.
But I can very easily slip back into the person I was experiencing each moment. And, you know, I hold on to a little bit of emotion there, but I don't let it overtake me.
You know, what I've witnessed with clients who have experienced trauma, pile up stressors, you know, our brain takes those experiences that were so intense and so threatening in so many different ways, and it stores it in a way that is meant to keep us safe. Right? Mm-hmm. Stores it in a way where these parts of us that got triggered or showed up or developed as a way to survive these different scenarios, I almost picture them like little guards, you know, mm-hmm. and the memories are stored in a way that kind of keeps it really at the forefront and really only focuses on the parts that felt like threats during these experiences, right? Like all the rest is like, okay, well, that's not a safety issue, right? Like that one little like glimmer moment or that one really supportive person or that supportive face or that thing that was said that was really helpful. That's not important right now, right? Like these parts of us that are these guards to keep us safe are like, we have to focus on the threats, the things that, and look for anything that's similar or familiar so that we can be on guard for this thing that was so scary so that we can keep ourselves safe. Like we can keep Amanda safe, right? Yeah. And our loved ones safe. And so when I hear you kind of express like how you've been able to kind of compartmentalize and you can talk about it and the emotions there, but it's what I really think is happening there is it's stored in a different way in your brain now from processing and getting support. And now you being able to share this story is a way in which you're making meaning of your experience and being able to help others as well. And I think that these parts of you, these parts of you, Amanda, are also getting a chance to rest and to show up in different ways and take on different roles and can kind of trust that you self like will like if things start to feel triggering or start to feel like too much, trust that you will show up to get more support, to advocate for yourself, to make space for rest, to make meaning of all of, to help make meaning of the experiences. That's what I hear.
Yes, that is, that's very accurate. I will say that because I dove into the online diabetes space and part of my job now is to share my story so often, it has been incredibly healing. And it's also very healing knowing that in sharing my story, I am being given the opportunity to help someone else not go through what I went through, or to alleviate it, or to hasten it, or, you know, just to make it less severe.
Maybe to help them make meaning of it and feel less alone even, you know, like if they can really relate to the traumatizing, intense parts that you've named here.
Yeah.
So connecting with the online community, and feeling less alone and was a huge part of your healing. Can you share other elements of your healing that you found were really important and powerful? So the listener can maybe get some ideas, because sometimes when you're just in the trenches, it feels like I don't even know where to start, you know?
Yes. So. Yeah. Well, I will say that I started with figuring out how I needed to process everything immediately after the diagnosis happened and the traumatic hospital stay happened. And the way that my husband and I process trauma, because now we've had all this, you know, all these experiences to practice it, is we fold inward to each other. We initially and immediately need space from other people. We need just a few of our closest people to be aware of what's happening.
Boundaries.
Yes. And so I figured out pretty quickly what boundaries were necessary for myself. I put them up, I held strong, and if anyone didn't like them, which some people in my life really did not like them, I just thought to myself, it's not your life. Yeah. It is mine.
Yeah.
And so it was hard. That was a really hard phase. And then it kind of snowballed from there into needing therapy, because like I mentioned, about 3 months post-diagnosis, I was driving the girls on the freeway and just the constant heightened awareness of I have to manage my daughter's diabetes because it's truly a life or death disease process.
Yeah.
That coupled with having a newborn that I'm still breastfeeding, waking up through the night. it led to a true panic attack. Like, I was actually seconds away from passing out on the freeway while driving my girls. That, when I really talk about that experience, makes me very emotional. And after that, my husband came, picked us up from the freeway. I literally couldn't get into a car without having a panic attack. And then I couldn't pick up my baby without having a panic attack, because I was just, my brain was convincing me that I was going to harm them in some way. And my husband is the best and brought us home from the side of the freeway that day. And he searched all of the available mental health resources for me and just handed me his phone and said, pick one. You're seeing a psychiatrist today.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
a couple of key points in what you just shared. One, boundaries. Mm-hmm. And what I really love that you named here in the context of setting a boundary, which I think sometimes is not something we initially realize about boundaries, is that boundaries are not actually about convincing the other person, right? Whether it's our toddler about a boundary or a family member or a friend, we have to convince ourselves. We have to decide this feels like the right value-informed, driven priority boundary for myself, for my family, for us, convince ourselves. And then we name it. We communicate the boundary. We hold the boundary. And others get to have their opinions, just like your toddler gets to have an opinion about the boundary, about turning the TV off, right? Like, they get to feel their feelings. So do others. That is their right. And yet you still get to decide for yourself. You've convinced yourself this is a boundary that we need. And I feel like that's how you kind of described the boundary setting process for yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is so important. And then also hear that when you needed help, how your support person stepped in. So a lot of times I do get questions around how, like, from, if I'm working with a client from a family member or from a loved one or a partner, how do I support my, you know, partner or, you know, adult daughter or friend who is really struggling? And a lot of times when we are in that space, what we need is for them to activate the next step of getting the support that we really need. And for you, it was your partner doing some of the research. Here are some folks who either take our insurance or are close by or seem to be really aligned with, like, the specialty of what it is that I think you're saying you need support around. And here are three options and here are the numbers. Or I've sent the initial email and they can set up a consult call, and now I'll pass it to you so that you have the agency, right, in making that next that decision of who the support person will be if it feels aligned. And gosh, even sometimes ways people can support is financially or childcare wise or a meal or taking something off of your plate so that you can take those necessary steps to support yourself so you can, because you deserve it, even outside of all the other roles that you hold, but also so that the family system as a whole can function.
Yes. Yeah. He immediately recognized that I was frozen from decision overload my whole life. You know, but definitely decision overload in the 2.5 short years that we were parenting. Yeah.
I want to interject here really quick that, like, not everybody's partner would maybe immediately recognize that or think of a way I can maybe support my partner is by recognizing they have decision overload and, like, stepping in and, you know, taking some decisions off the plate, right? Mm-hmm. In a way that feels like they're not taking agency away in a way that feels right, right? Yeah. Do you have, like, any tips or pieces of advice here that you think has supported you and your partner getting into this place where he was able to recognize that, where there was that, as you've named between you and him, like this kind of constant, right? That like has been really important through all of this.
Yeah, I will say the amount of time that we've been together, like, you know, there's nothing more valuable than just putting in the effort for that many years. We're approaching 14 years together. So I know that's not necessarily helpful for people who might be struggling, who don't have that kind of time under their belt, but we have constantly communicated. We just talk and talk and talk and talk. And eventually, however many years into the relationship, maybe 4 or 5, we got to this point where we realized we're talking and that's awesome, but it's taking us forever to come to this point of truly understanding what the other person is trying to say. And what's blocking that. And for us, it was ego. And so we acknowledged that, named it, and every fight from there on out was like, you know, okay, are you pushing back because of your ego or not?
As a mom to 3, my partner and I find that one of the biggest struggles we have faced in our relationship is navigating sharing responsibilities and the mental load. And I know that we're not alone because this shows up with all of my clients, and in every podcast episode, the mental load of parenting shows up in some way or another. Enter the scene, Coexist. Coexist is the app that's revolutionizing how couples manage the mental load of household tasks and childcare. It's like having a personal assistant right in your pocket, helping you and your partner effortlessly share tasks, plan meals, collaborate on lists, and even give each other kudos along the way. Here's the cherry on top. For my amazing community, Coexist is offering an exclusive deal. Sign up for a 2-week free trial before June 15th, and you'll get 15% off the annual plan on iOS with the code DrCassidy15. So what are you waiting for? Really, take that first step towards a more harmonious home life today. Download Coexist on Android or iOS at getcoexist.com. The load in our home has been feeling a little bit lighter since downloading Coexist, and yours can feel lighter too when you download the Coexist app at getcoexist.com. Since becoming a parent and as I've gotten older, I've become a lot more mindful of the supplements and products that I use. And that's why I love Pieri. These are natural food supplements that I trust completely. Let's talk a bit about collagen. So collagen is so important for our bodies, but our natural production of it slows as we get older. So I've learned. And quality supplements support our muscle, bone, and joint health. Recently, I've been taking Pieri's CP1 Pure Collagen Peptides. It was number 1 out of 28 collagens tested by the Organic Consumers Association and Clean Label Project. There are enough hard decisions that we make every day as parents, and this makes Pieri an easy choice. See and feel the difference with Pieri. I know you'll love their supplements as much as I do. Pieri is offering my listeners an amazing deal, 20% off site-wide. Just go to my special URL, pieri.com/DrCassidy, and use my promo code DrCassidy. So go to PURI.com/DrCassidy. Don't miss out. Use promo code DrCassidy at pieri.com/DrCassidy.
Yeah. And I think once we both got really practiced in tossing our ego aside quickly, we were able to get to the point of what the other person was trying to say immediately.
Yeah.
And in doing that time and time and time again, we just began to, you know, I don't know, work in this way where we sense what the other person needs before they have to say it.
You know, my husband and I, we're also been together since high school. So it's been like over like 20 years, I think. And I will say that, you know, we did have the time, and in our relationship, the when we had pregnancy loss, when we were postpartum, you know, and I was a therapist. Gosh, there was so much, I think this is part of what kept us from getting support earlier. There was a lot of kind of shame of like, I should, we should, all the shoulds, all the shoulding all over the relationship, like be able to get through this, be able to communicate effectively. This should bring us closer. We should be, yeah. And it was, the relationship was one of the stressors for me over a decade ago when we had our first and had our pregnancy loss. And it, and then, and for us, it took going to therapy, getting support, having someone else in there to help us identify, you know, you named it as ego here. And, you know, the link, and a lot of times it's just semantics, and the language that I've used is like the parts of ourselves, you know, like and ego being a part, right? Like, so to the point now where when him and I are get caught up in our cycles, like we're able to see how different parts of ourselves that we've that predate the relationship, even though we've been together for so long, right? Like things that we had learned were adaptive when we were kids, right? Mm-hmm. When there was conflict or tension, or we felt misunderstood, right? Or we were overstimulated, that would show up in the relationship, and definitely showed up in when we weren't sleeping as much, when we had somebody else that we were responsible for, and all these new decisions to make together, when intimacy was impacted. And it really did take doing couples work, and not just once, but like continuously, when we get caught up in a space where we are having a hard time seeing each other and seeing how we're on, like giving each other the most generous interpretation and being able to see we're on the same side, coming back to it, you know? I think that we will continuously throughout our relationship be coming back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. The generosity, like interpretation. Truly love that, because I agree, when we get into a negative cycle, because it happens. I mean, it's a marriage, it's a partnership, it's going to happen. But going back to thinking the best of the other person is going to expedite those fights and misunderstandings. Because you're working towards the same goal instead of fighting against each other.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's talk. I want to transition here a little bit to kind of looking more specifically at the diabetes diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I know that this has now become like your life's work is education and support and helping bridge the resources. So what are the things that you really want the listener to hear about the diagnosis process, right? And and then the lifelong chronic, right? Like support that both you and your child need.
Sure. So it's a lot. I think that first of all, if you don't have diabetes in the family and you don't know anyone with diabetes, we as a society associate diabetes with type 2 diabetes. And so there's kind of this preconceived notion that diabetes equals soda and candy, essentially, right? And type 2 diabetes is a whole other beast in and of itself. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition. Your body attacks itself. It attacks the cells that produce insulin. Insulin is a hormone that courses through the body that allows your cells to be fed the nutrition they need.
Yeah.
And so when your body attacks those cells, basically you no longer have the keys to get nutrition into your cells. Your cells die. If your cells die, you die. It's truly a life or death chronic illness. And so I think that's the first thing that I want to put out there, is how incredibly serious type 1 diabetes is. And, you know, there's so many people who live with it and manage it. And so it can sometimes feel like, oh, it's diabetes. You just give yourself some insulin and eat the food you need and that's it. And that's not it. So that's type 1 diabetes, just, you know, in a very quick nutshell. But in terms of the diagnosis process, the main signs are if you're thirsty, you can't get enough water. You could drink a gallon of water and you're still thirsty. If you're so hungry, you can eat an entire plate of Mexican food and you aren't satiated at all. If you are peeing constantly, and if you're losing weight. So those are the four main signs and symptoms to look out for. But there's a lot of other things, you know, associated with that, especially with young children. If you would like, I can get into what it looked like for my daughter and how I
knew to get her seen. You know, just I think the listener, you know, would be, if there is that concern, right? Like, you know, I think that's a helpful piece. And or if they've already gone through it, just to kind of see, gosh, you know, this was hard and I'm not alone. I think there's benefits on both
definitely.
Ends.
Definitely. Okay, so the story is in December of 2021, the four of us as a family all got COVID at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so this is all around Christmas and we're isolated and whatever. And we're all not feeling great, right? But my two-year-old, she's thirsty, but she's saying, my throat hurts. I have a sore throat. So I'm missing a lot of these signs and symptoms. So I'm giving her ice water. I'm giving her Pedialyte. You push fluids on your child that has a virus. That's, we all know to do that. So now she's starting to pee through some of her diapers, but that's not concerning for me yet because, again, pushing fluids. Her appetite's a little funky. She doesn't want this. She only wants these sweet things. She wants yogurt and berries. Well, she's a two-year-old who's sick. Of course she wants what she wants to eat, right?
Yeah.
She's lethargic. Her naps are 3 hours instead of 90 minutes. Yeah, I would love to nap all day too with this, you know, virus. Like we're all tired. So the thing that made everything click was I picked her up one morning and she had peed through a nighttime diaper again and soaked into the mattress and her breath smelled like port wine to me. That's another sign. It's a late sign. It's a scary sign because the body is literally attempting to get rid of the acid that's building up and it smells sweet, sickly. And everything from nursing school came flooding back. And I looked at my husband and I said, she has type 1 diabetes. I can feel it. And he was sort of like, can kids even get it? I'm like, I don't know. I barely remember it from that one chapter in nursing school. The NICU babies don't have type 1 diabetes. Like, I wasn't practiced in my nursing career dealing with type 1 diabetes. And it's not in either side of the family, and neither one of us had any friends with it growing up. So we were really in the dark here.
Yeah.
And this was on a Saturday. And of course, we still had COVID. So I was hesitant to bring her into a hospital.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And I end up on the phone with more doctors than I can even remember because it wasn't feeling right. And they were all dismissing my concerns, saying it's not type 1 diabetes. It's definitely not. It's the COVID. She has a UTI. And it got to the point where one doctor even said to me, like, I want you to come in and we will do a straight catheterization, meaning put a catheter up your daughter's urethra to get a clean urine sample. And I told her, no, I just want the finger prick to check the blood sugar reading. And she said, well, if you're not going to consent to that, that's your decision. And you can wait until Monday to see your pediatrician.
Oh my gosh, the medical gaslighting and the like, ugh.
And if we had waited till Monday, she would not have been alive. So I ended up taking her to urgent care because I just could not.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to sleep that night. So I figured I'm just going to take her in. And her blood sugar did not even read on the meter. It was well over 555. For reference, healthy people who have a functioning pancreas barely get over 140-ish after eating a sugary meal. Mm-hmm. And she was in DKA, which stands for diabetic ketoacidosis. And that is step one of your body and organs fully shutting down. So she was beginning to die. And so we were sent to the Children's Hospital. We were told, you don't get to go home. You go straight to the hospital. They have a bed waiting. They know you are coming. And from there, it was just about the worst 48 hours of our lives. Because she had COVID, we were in an isolation room.
My
was at home. They wouldn't take my milk that I was pumping in the room to put in the fridge because of the COVID isolation. So they just gave me a bag of ice. My husband couldn't come in for the education. They allowed him up for one 30-minute session. So it became my responsibility to teach him everything about type 1 diabetes.
Oh, gosh.
And then not to mention like the medical trauma of a 26-month-old being held down for IV after IV after IV.
Yeah.
That part still gets me.
Yeah.
It can't not. Like, I don't know if I'll ever recover from that, really.
Yeah.
So, that was our story. And life was different forever.
Life was different. She's here.
Yes.
She's alive. You advocated. You're spreading the education now. You're teaching others. And you experience medical gaslighting. Mm-hmm. You had to take on a load on your own. There was trauma along so many steps of the way.
Yes.
Now, I love to hear a little bit about these steps you've taken to make meaning of your experience and to teach others. This has become a life's passion for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that so that the listener from hearing this now is either being educated. This is not something is currently a part of their life, but they're now being educated.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're tuning in because this is something that they've lived through and that is a part of their life. And now there are resources that you have that you could share with those families. So would love to hear now what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, before I get into that, I do want to say that after I had my panic attack and I was seen by a psychiatrist, I got a diagnosis of crippling high functioning anxiety, which was, you know, no longer high functioning. And so what was necessary for me and for my brain was to get started on medications. So getting started on anti-anxiety medication and then having weekly therapy for 9 months got me to this place where I was back at baseline, and baseline was when I started healing.
Okay. Thank you for naming that trajectory of that. You know, I think that's really important.
It was very important because I think that so many people are searching for how do I get better? And I'm like, you have to put on your own oxygen mask first.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And then I actually did not have social media, and I gave it up when I was 19. And there was, you know, we had an appointment with Hattie's endocrinologist, and we were talking to a nurse, and I was struggling, and I was kind of given some pushback. And at one point she stopped and looked at me and said, what kind of support do you have? And I broke down and I didn't think I was going to cry. And I just said, what do you mean support? Like, I'm the only person in the world with a 2-year-old diabetic. What are you talking about? And she was like, you know, Instagram today. right now. And I was like, I don't want to. And she was like, just do it. And so I did. Mm-hmm. And that's where this all started, is I found this community and I found this company called Type One Together. And it is a small business that provides products and resources and community and education to Type One families. So it's geared towards Type One children, but obviously it's for parents and, you know, caretakers of those Type One children. And I loved what the founder and owner was bringing to the space. She is a Type One diabetic herself in her mid-20s. But she does not have children. And I actually reached out to her and said, hey, I really love what you're doing. I do think there's something missing in this space regarding a parent's perspective and like the honesty, the real truth, because, you know, it's the internet. So everything I was seeing was a lot of like, my child's blood sugars are perfect. And look at,
the double-edged sword of social media. Yeah.
I just wasn't vibing what I was seeing, and I kind of wanted to interject a little bit. Mm-hmm. And she had a call with me and asked me to make a video talking about my experience, and I did, and it just took off. So I am now Type One Together's Director of Parent Support. Mm-hmm. I lead the charge on all things content related to the parent experience. And I drop tips and tricks about how to give injections to those tiny kids who run away because they just can't handle one more shot. I talk about the pros and cons of pumps and continuous glucose monitors and just things of that nature.
So beautiful. I just want to thank you, Amanda, for taking the time today to share with us so many different pieces of your story, the hard, the healing, and all of the things in between. And I know it's just the Cliff Notes version, right? I mean, it's the narrative. It's the narrative that you have today in how it comes out in the context of this recording, right? And I know there's, of course, so many other layers and pieces and things to teach and things to share and learn. And so I'd love to kind of end with giving you a chance to share where the listener can continue to connect with you and learn more about Type One Together, and also just continue to learn from you.
So I am on Type One Together's Instagram mostly. That's where most of our content lies. And it's just at Type One Together. One is O-N-E, not the number one. Mm-hmm. And we're also on TikTok. It is typeonetogether.com. That's our website where you can buy some of the products that we sell, like hand crocheted stuffed animals that have insulin pumps sewn onto them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, cute things like that. We've created online courses to help newly diagnosed families get up to speed, or to help teach the grandparents that just aren't quite getting it, or whoever else.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where you can find us. And my business partner also brings so much invaluable information to the space, you know, being somebody who lives with it and has been living with it since she was 5. Mm-hmm. So there's also that perspective that you gain by following us.
Yeah, to kind of see like all that's possible, right? Because I imagine there could be moments where the stress of the future comes in. And so having both you in it as the parent and her who's lived through it as a child and into adulthood, that's sounds like that's where the magic happens, is bridging those things together.
We think it's a winning combo.
Yes. Amanda, thank you so much for coming on. I will share links to all that you've shared in the show notes so the listener can go straight there to learn more and connect. I really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you so much, Cassidy, for having me. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air.
And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.